Tonight's presentation of Coast to Coast AM is an encore presentation from 1996. It's Art Bell's very first interview with Father Malachi Martin. And now, the very best of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, or good morning as the case may be, across all these many, many time zones, stretching from the Hawaiian and Tahitian Islands in the west, all the way east across this great land, to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south all the way into South America and north to Santa Country at the Pole, worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM, live talk radio throughout the nighttime right here. Friday night, Saturday morning, and something a little unusual coming up in a few moments. Dr. Malachi Martin. And you're in for a real treat tonight, let me tell you. So all of that coming up in a moment. I want to remind everybody on our webpage is a wide, wide variety of items that you might want to take a look at. The Chehalis, Washington Crop Circle, Laguna Hills, Southern California Crop Circle, the Oliver's Castle Crop Circle in AVI format, actually forming before your eyes with lights above it. Electron microscope images of what are alleged to be alien implants done by a scientist in the Midwest at the behest of John Mack at Harvard. And some detailed high-res photos of the pyramid and the Sphinx by Caroline Davies. All of that up on the webpage right now, as well as a link to Dr. Malachi Martin's website right now on my website, which is www.artbell.com. www.artbell.com. So to it in a moment. What I'm advertising here should be in every single American household. Christmas would be just a great time for you to get it into the household of somebody you love. It's the Super Bajan Crank Up Radio. It's got a crank on the side. You turn it for 30 seconds. You get 30 minutes of radio, emergency radio, or everyday radio if you wish. Every time you turn that crank, 30 seconds, you get 30 minutes of radio, and you get 30 minutes of emergency light, because it's got this wonderful built-in recessed LED array light that comes out, and it's on like a 10-foot cord or better, and you can clamp it to whatever and use it as a work light and have radio. It's got a solar panel on top. It's so sensitive, it will collect enough power from a 100-watt light bulb just above it to operate. Full time at full room volume. This is not a headphone thing. At full room volume, AM, FM, and shortwave radio, all wrapped up into this wonderful emergency instrument. Or everyday instrument, whatever. And it's the weekly special offer for Christmas. Right now, on sale, $119.95. Wait a minute, there's even a better deal here. $119.95 on sale, but you buy three, and they go down to $99.95 each. That's a really, really good deal. So call the C. Crane Company in the morning at 1-800-522-8863. They begin the Christmas doors open at about 6:30 in the morning. 1-800-522-8863. What a great gift for anybody. Mars is coming. That's right, everybody. It's really coming. Mars is about to be, this coming summer, it's about to be closer to Earth than it's been in 50,000 years. Your view of Mars through a high-class deep space telescope is going to be the best view there's been in 50,000 years. This is not to be missed. And so we have for you this wonderful, big, classic telescope. This is the monster of them all, folks. Comes on a tripod with an equatorial mount. It's absolutely the best scope for the money. And deep space stargazing, planet hunting, and visiting real close-up with Mars. What an opportunity. It's at forthenightsky.com. That's F-O-R, thenightsky.com. And aside from just that event worth seeing once in a lifetime, Getting a telescope for you and your family will begin to change your outlook on a lot of things in life about who we are and where we are with reference to everything else that's out there. It's very educational as well as fun. The number, if you'd like to order for Christmas, is 1-800-394-3307 at forthenightsky.com on the web. That's forthenightsky.com on the web. Or 1-800-394-3307. Dr. Malachi Martin, ex-Jesuit, former exorcist and one-time advisor to three popes, is currently a best-selling author. As a premier investigator of clandestine politics and unlikely alliances of popes and cardinals, his novels offer rare insights into the men who guide nearly a billion people in faith and broker the destinies of countries and continents. As a member of the Vatican Intelligence Network, I didn't know they had one. Under Pope John the 23rd, Martin helped extend the church into Iron Curtain countries in 1964, concerned about the corrupting influences of power. Martin was released from his vows of poverty and obedience after 25 years as a Jesuit. He left Rome for New York, where he did odd jobs until a Guggenheim Fellowship enabled him to write his first bestseller, Hostage to the Devil. It was followed by The Final Conclave, Vatican, Three Popes and the Cardinal, The Keys of This Blood, The Jesuits, and apparently many others. He's a very prolific author. To give you some idea of how he is reviewed, Forbes magazine said, "No spiritual journey is complete without a Vatican page-turner by Malachi Martin." Sacramento Bee said, "It is to Martin's credit that his real-life fictional cardinals have flesh, blood, and bone, sometimes the heart of a South Chicago ward healer." The Dallas Morning News said, "In biblical times, they would have called him a prophet." Publishers Weekly said, "It is impossible not to be impressed with Martin's profound knowledge of men, issues, and history." I could go on and on and on and on. For 30 years, as a Catholic priest, Dr. Martin did exorcisms. So, from New York City, staying up late, here is Dr. Malachi Martin. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, there, Art. How are you?
Oh, I am very well, and I am so honored to have you here.
No, I'm really privileged to be talking on this vast network. it is really universal.
It really is universal now. It's
know,
amazing.
I heard you describe it from north to south to east to west.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. Covers a lot of territory. I'm not... My background, doctor, is not Catholicism. I'm not Catholic. My wife is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to stumble and bumble, and I hope you'll bear with me.
I doubt that you could stumble and bumble in anything. But anyway, we'll take that as a simple statement.
And take this also as a simple statement. Many years ago now, you can tell me how many,
yes.
The movie The Exorcist came out.
Yes.
It was the first of its kind, really. Major movies, and it scared the hell out of me. Be honest with you, and as no movie, even with all their horrible little monsters, ever has since. And I'm not sure why.
Isn't that funny? Isn't that interesting? I find that very curious. I really do. Even more than any of the Dracula and the Frankenstein films.
Even more than the movies with Alien, where monsters are popping out of people's bellies and all sorts of horrible things. And I think the reason is because I viewed The Exorcist as real.
Yes, I think so. And it did touch on a chord, the existence of a demon, which could, on occasion, inhabit the body of some human being. I think that might be the element. It was set also, that particular picture was set in Washington, real lifetime Washington, you know, and you had real live looking characters undergoing these horrible contortions and distortions. So I suppose it did. The fact is, Art, the fact is that at the back of our consciousness at the back of our consciousness, at least in, I was going to say in the West, but then I know it's the same in India, it's the same in China, it's the same in Japan, and in Latin America. At the back of our consciousness, there's always a fear of the evil one.
Yes. Well, there may be a reason for that. The evil one. Now, let me start there by asking you, is there a difference between possession by the devil and possession by a demon?
Yes, there is. You see, the mythology or the legend or the doctrine or the teaching, whichever you want to regard it as, it holds that there is a major evil spirit called Lucifer. And there is another one called Satan. And they are accompanied by, or they are among, many, many smaller demons. And these do attack and possess human beings in their will and their intellect. That's the general sort of picture you get from books and studies and doctrine and teaching about the devil and about evil. And I think that what I was saying was that I think at the edge of our consciousness there's always the fear that perhaps indeed there is such a thing if
That's
we don't
right.
believe it. We Catholics do hold it, and Christians in general do hold it, but there's a consciousness that there's some evil spirit at work. It could be in our world, and we're afraid of it. And that it can, according to the belief in many parts of the world and in many parts of history of man, there is the possibility of being possessed, of one's body being dominated by such an evil spirit and used for nefarious ends.
Doctor, the devil, is the devil a fallen angel? Is that correct?
That's the idea. They are all fallen angels. The idea is that once upon a time, one-third of the angels of God revolted against him and were condemned to hell and became demons.
What was the purpose of that rebellion, Doctor?
The purpose of the rebellion was simply the ambition of one spirit, Lucifer, the son of the dawn, that's what his name means, the light bearer or the son of the dawn, who said, I will not serve. I will be equal to God. And he was opposed by one spirit who said, who is like unto God? And that's the name of Michael, Mikael, who is like unto God.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this, supposedly, this huge battle between the spirits, and the demons lost. And Michael and those fighting for God won. And forever, the fallen angels, those who rebelled, are condemned to hell and condemned to be evil and to promote evil amongst human beings.
How do we, human beings, fit into the picture? It's almost as though the war is over human beings.
Yes, it is over human beings. The teaching is that once upon a time, God envisaged the world inhabited by men and women and served by angels. But when Lucifer and Satan and the other demons, then angels, were asked to collaborate and cooperate and serve human beings, especially one particular human being who would be God, namely Christ, Jesus of Nazareth, they said, no, we are angels. We are superior to these material beings. We haven't got their limitations, and we don't die, and we haven't got material bodies. We are pure spirits. So they were destined originally to serve human beings, and they refused.
Doctor, how old were you when you became a priest?
I was 33.
33.
And that was in 1954.
And when did you first encounter, as a young priest, how did you encounter anybody who was possessed? I know you have done, how many exorcisms have you done?
I've done thousands of minor exorcisms and about a couple of hundred major ones. Major ones in duration and in intensity. Are difficult, very difficult, and they're far fewer than the thousands of exorcisms you do every year. Exorcisms against various ailments like for instance, a persecution a complex, where you're really being obsessed by a devil or a demon,
mm-hmm.
or alcoholism, or the human ills. The list is enormous. Now, I first of all came across it in Cairo. That was the first time that I assisted at an exorcism.
Cairo, Egypt.
Cairo, Egypt. I was there. I originally started off as an archaeologist, and I was an expert in handwriting, ancient handwriting, about the time of Abraham. That's about 1700 B.C. That's about, 3,000-something years ago.
Yes,
and I was roped in one evening because an exorcism which was taking place in the poorer quarter of Cairo, the assistant to the exorcist, there's always an exorcist and an assistant, the assistant had fallen ill, and I was asked to substitute. And that was my first experience.
Well, it is my understanding. Again, I'm operating from total ignorance here, other than the movies that I've seen.
Yes, yes.
It may be all wrong. But my understanding is the Catholic Church does not lightly undertake to do an exorcism.
No.
How does it decide?
It decides this way. So somebody comes to the church authorities and saying, look, my uncle, my brother, my wife, my sister, whatever it is, they are showing very funny signs. And there's usually in every good, well-run diocese, there's an exorcist, that is a priest appointed by the local bishop to deal with this. So the first thing you do is examine them, get them examined by a doctor, and find out, are they physically sound?
Certainly.
There are ailments like La Tourette syndrome, or Huntington's chorea, or a simple tumor in the brain, which produces phenomena, produces events in a person's life that look very like possession, but are not. So you must first of all satisfy yourself that there's nothing physical, no physical basis. Then one or two expert psychiatrists, usually people who don't believe in God, by the way,
mm-hmm.
because they're skeptical, must tackle you and find out, are you just plain loony, or is there something they don't understand? And
sure.
If they come back with a report saying, well, the pattern is normal, we can't explain it, then the church authorities generally say, okay, let's try exorcism. And in the first 20 minutes, believe you me, in the first 20 minutes, everybody at an exorcism ceremony, knows whether it's genuine or not. It's quite clear.
In the longest or the hardest exorcisms, how long typically might it go on?
It can go on for... The classic one in the United States was about 2.5 years long.
2.5 years?
2.5 years, yeah. It's been written up very recently by a simple reporter who simply chronicled the entire thing. But I've assisted at ones which went on for, 17 weeks.
My goodness.
You measure it in weeks. Sometimes it's only a week. Sometimes it's only hours. It depends. It depends on the tenacity of the demon in possession. It depends on the antecedents of the person. It depends on so many factors, you just can't predict. You go into it blind in that sense.
You said, you said demons. So the majority of possessions are by demons.
That's right, they are. All true possession is by demons. Now, you see, there's a distinction between possession and obsession.
Hmm.
Obsession is where somebody is being bothered continually by, for instance, cases I have in hand at the present moment are people who are bothered continually by appearances of animals with human faces bothering them, or pressures on them at night when they want to go to sleep.
Yes.
And funny faces and funny things happening to them. And you finally, when you rationalize it all and had the person examined physically and mentally, you come to the conclusion there are objective events taking place and they are being bothered and obsessed by a demon, and then you set about chasing that demon away.
Of those that have gone past the medical doctor and
yes.
the psychiatrists,
yes.
what percentage would you say turn out to be actual cases of possession?
My experience would say about 80%.
80%. Then I would also ask, you said examined by two psychiatrists who do not necessarily believe in God.
That's right. Generally, I've always tried to use the services and the skills of psychiatrists who will tell you I'm an atheist. You know, I really don't believe in practically in God.
Really?
So, well, they're not influenced, therefore, by any prejudice.
So then there is a good use for even the atheist.
There is. Although I must tell you that I've only found one or two psychiatrists who wanted to assist at an exorcism, and generally, one of them I wrote about, Dr. Hammond, he simply gave up all psychiatry.
He did.
Once he went into the real thing, yes.
My question was going to be, how many people who thought they were possessed were diagnosed, in your opinion, incorrectly by psychiatrists who might tend to, because of their own prejudice, want to claim this apparent malady as their own territory. So how many never made it to you because they were incorrectly diagnosed?
A very great number, especially when we come down to a thing called MPDs. It's an abbreviation used by psychiatrists for multiple personality disorders. That is, you know, say, let's take the name Hilda, and Hilda says that she becomes Mary in certain occasions, then she becomes Joan on other occasions, and she becomes Geraldine on third occasion, you know, multiple personality disorder. And for a long time, MPDs were simply analyzed as MPDs. And then, under certain circumstances, they began to find out that it was much more than that. It was a case of demonic possession. And that has to be very carefully distinguished, because you can make a dreadful mistake and think a true MPD is possessed, or vice versa, that a person really possessed is an MPD.
Well, then I would ask, I guess, can a person be possessed by more than one entity?
Oh yes, and the same demon can possess three people at the same time.
Oh, my.
It all depends. The variation is tremendous. And nobody, you see, Art, this is a very dirty, unhealthy, inhuman, insalubrious, wicked, and unnatural process and event. And nobody should touch it with a barge pole except somebody trained, and even then to be very careful, because it's highly dangerous. For instance, if you start any nonsense, real exorcism, and a lot of people don't know the difference between that and therapy, the difference between that and prayer, healing prayer, deliverance prayer, as they call it. But if you start something like that and don't finish it, you're going to have trouble for the rest of your life.
Well, I was going to ask you about the danger to yourself, and I will do that when we come back. Dr. Martin, stand by. We'll come back to you in a moment.
Sure.
We're at the bottom of the hour. My guest is Dr. Malachi Martin. For 30 years, he did exorcisms and was in the hierarchy of the Catholic Church. It's going to be a very interesting evening. I suggest you stay right where you are.
Tonight's presentation of Coast to Coast AM is an encore presentation from 1996. It's 5 hours with Art Bell and one of his most beloved guests, Father Malachi Martin. And now, the very first interview with Art Bell and Father Malachi Martin on this Coast to Coast AM.
Once again, here I am. Good evening, good morning, whatever the case may be. My guest is Dr. Malachi Martin, and we'll get back to him in a moment. The After Dark newsletter has been reporting subjects that we talk about right here on the show. And just like the show, After Dark has been evolving and changing and keeping folks guessing. You never know what you're going to get next, but it's always a lot of fun. Give yourself a treat and subscribe. Just log on to my website, artbell.com. Go to the library link on the left. You'll find the After Dark link in the menu there. Click and you can subscribe on the secure server. Or call any time of the day or night, toll free, 1-888-727 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505 for only $39.95. You'll receive this four-color magazine every month for a year. Subscribe right now, and you'll get two free issues, 14 for the price of 12. Subscribe online at artbell.com or call right now, 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. Back now to Dr. Malachi Martin. Doctor, are you there?
Of course I am.
Good. Good.
I'm into everything. I'm fascinated.
Doctor, is there now or is there going to be an Antichrist?
Whether there is now is a question. There is going to be an Antichrist, and I think the best thing we can do is talk about his public appearance.
All right.
Because he may already be in existence. For me to say he is in existence would immediately provoke the questions, where is he and what is he doing?
Yes.
Now, I want to avoid that.
Yes.
But he will be manifest publicly within a reasonable amount of time. Most people who are 20-something or 30-something will come across Antichrist in their life. I'm 76. I may not.
How will we know him?
We will know him by two main qualities. First of all, he will arrive at a time when we as a race have what looks like insuperable problems. Supposing we discover we have insuperable, really insuperable environmental problems.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Supposing we find we have insuperable health problems, a disease.
Yes,
wasting,
sir.
Wasting nation after nation.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. He will have solutions for those problems. He will have wise solutions, solutions that are real solutions. And number two, the results of his solutions will be such that people will say, you must be God. And he will accept that attribute.
He will accept that.
Yes, he will accept that. That will be, those are the three marks of the Antichrist.
Well, you've already done it to me. You're already giving me chills. I've been a talk show host, doctor, for about, in this incarnation, 13 years.
That's a long time, doing
this program. And in the last several years, doctor, I've begun to observe something that I just picked a word and I began to call it the quickening.
It's a very good word, Art.
it's
a very discerning word. You must speak from experience.
Well,
you must.
I speak from watching the news of what man is doing by the day.
Yes.
Doctor, and by this quickening, I mean socially, I'm watching these horrible things happening. Yesterday is just an example. In Sacramento, a man was holed up and killed his two children in front of his wife, and then in front of his wife killed himself. This kind of senseless, mindless,
unbelievable
behavior socially.
And it's not isolated, my God.
I know, it's not isolated. Politically, doctor, I look around and I see no sense to what is going on. We have lost our way.
We have lost our way. There's no doubt about that. Could I stick in something at this moment, Art? Could I make a remark?
You may indeed.
There is, in Scripture and in tradition, and by the way, I'm a Roman Catholic, so I'm not sort of dependent on the Bible as Protestants are, and that's their choice. But there is a thing called the mystery of iniquity, and it's a very constant teaching of the Bible and of religious men and women, and it's this. That evil is allowed from time to time to so dull the senses of men and women and to so disturb the equilibrium of their minds that they do crazy, real crazy, mad, bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And here is the point that gives me a chill. I'm 76, and I noticed that in the last 20, 25 years of my life, the incidence of such disequilibrium, the incidence of that seemed to be much more frequent than when I was younger.
Yes.
Much more, yeah, there are much more shocking things happen, and it's not that we're getting to know them. No, 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 the world was connected at that time. Communications were slow when I was young, say when I was 25, or when I was 20. But all the news got around, but we never heard such a plethora of shocking, unbelievably violent, unnatural happenings to ordinary people. So the mystery of iniquity seems to be pressuring, and the idea in the teaching about the mystery of iniquity is that there is a darkness, a mental darkness that closes in and makes ordinary people do the most extraordinary and shocking things.
Well, that's one part of it, a horrible, scary part of it. But also, you mentioned the environment.
Yeah.
I've been monitoring stories lately, Doctor, about the ozone, about deformed frogs, which are said to be an indicator species. I have had people on from various disciplines that you may not agree with who call themselves remote viewers, to prophets, to Native Americans, and frankly, they all tell a very similar story with regard to what they think is immediately in front of us in the next few years.
I happen to agree with them. I happen to be even have gone further in my thought than merely agreeing with them. I think there is a case of radiation. I think that we are being radiated in such a way that it distorts the chemical balance of our system, our mental system. And that slowly but surely, a vast section of the public is being dulled, doesn't see what's happening.
Yes.
Doesn't realize what is being done to them.
The slowly boiling frog.
That's right. I mean, the frogs, they buy. There was one example of a frog reported here in all our papers in North America, of a frog with one eye in its head and the other in its mouth.
Yes, I know.
The distortion, the complete ruination of nature.
I'm afraid I can tell you more, Father, from the north central part of the United States, across to Vermont, to Montreal, even in Japan now.
Yes.
Deformed frogs with 4 to 6 legs, as you pointed out, eyes in throats, missing eyes, and I could go on and on. Horrible,
I know.
Horrible, I know. Deformities. Something's happening.
Well, and then, by the way, we should also add things we are not told in public. The deformed babies that are born in a section of Europe, which is also covered by the Chernobyl explosion, but also simply happening, deformations of adults as well as children. And they're not reported widely.
Doctor, a report 2 days ago from London of an abnormal amount of deformed fetuses in Britain. Britain is experiencing more radiation, ultraviolet radiation, as a result of depletion of the ozone right now than are we.
Sure. Sure. Then, by the way, there's a thing because we're touching a sacred cow when we touch on it, and that's nuclear energy.
Yes, sir.
I'm firmly convinced from the evidence that, and the evidence by reputable scientists, these are not crackpots. They're men who have engaged in Nobel Prize activities in chemistry and in physiology and economics, and they can point out the effect of radiation on the human frame, especially on those parts of the brain that deal with moral and ethical judgment. And it's a bit frightening because it means that the rise in criminality, the distinct rise in criminality,
mm-hmm.
recidivism, constant crime and doing and horrible crimes with no reason at all but simply cruelty, is some deformation of nature in itself. And I'm afraid it's on the increase, not on the decrease.
Is it reasonable to ask you what, when a human being is possessed by a demon, what is the purpose of the possession of an individual?
The destruction of that individual's soul to such a point that it must end up in hell. Hell being a place, a location, an existence which is totally separate from God. The belief is that everybody was created to be happy forever, and God wants everybody to enjoy heaven, the joys of heaven, the perpetuity of heaven, the peace of heaven, and the ecstasy of heaven. The demons, excluded from that and barred from it because of their rebellion, want to make sure that as many human beings as possible don't attain it. And that is done by possession. And possession is a funny thing. It's a funny operation. It never starts suddenly. You don't wake up in the morning and say, gee whiz, I'm possessed. You know, it doesn't happen like that. It's like any addiction. It's like anything that happens slowly. It's bit by bit. Bit by bit, I cede control of my will and my intellect to a demon. And one day, the possession is complete.
Is this a fight, doctor, between an individual's will and that of the demon?
Well, usually, to be more accurate, it's a fight between the will of the exorcist and the will of the demon.
Well, I guess I meant before you've, or somebody like yourself has met up with this possessed individual, as the process of takeover is underway, is it a fight between the person's...
Yes, it is, between the person's will and the demon intending to possess. Usually the tendency or the attempt to possess is through deception. For instance, we have, in the northeast corner of America, since 1975, we've had a huge increase in the following type of possession. A young man, say 30-something, 40-something, a young woman, will come and say, look, when I was in college, when I was studying, when I took up a residence as a doctor, a lawyer, whatever it was, I made a pact with the devil. I needed money. I needed a position. And I asked him to help me, and he did, but he took over my will and my mind. Now I want to get rid of it. How do I get rid of it?
Well,
we have an increase in that phenomenon, which I never thought we had. Some of them don't even believe in God. Some of them are Jewish, some of them are Buddhist, some of them are Christian, some of them are Protestants or Catholics. There's no profile of the possessible person.
Once you have issued such an invitation, is there any way to go back?
If it has been taken up, then your only recourse is exorcism, that we know of. There may be other recourses. We don't know of any recourse except that.
Are there cases in which a possession is not obvious?
Yes, there are.
I would imagine there are many where the spirit has simply won and is in firm control. I would think that the people who come to you are those who are sort of in the middle of a giant battle.
That's right. When you find some, you know, the typical things of somebody throwing themselves on the ground or cursing and spitting and protesting and defecating, urinating and all sorts of protest. What they're doing is protesting, saying, help me.
Yes.
Help me. The perfectly possessed, we call them the perfectly possessed, are those that are completely at peace. And I've known several of the perfectly possessed, and I avoid them like the pest. And you know them only by almost accidental means. Sometimes, they're perfectly normal, by the way, and they've got great business property, they're married, they have children and wives, and they put down responsible jobs. There's nothing wrong there. Now and again, just now and again, it's as it were, a veil is drawn aside, and you see somebody you don't know at all. You just don't know this person, this man, this woman. And there's a completely alien look, a completely alien attitude, and they breathe alienation. And you know then, if you have a nose for it, you know then that they're perfectly possessed and there's nothing to be done about it. The first man I knew like that was called Beedham, John Beedham. And it was a frightening experience because I had known him for years.
In other words, their pact, their deal, They are at peace with and comfortable with
That's right. And they have passed through the usual Satanist rituals too. The three Satanist rituals: the power of inflicting pain, the power of hating, and the power of burning fire. Fire is part of the Satanist and the Luciferian development. And they've passed through all those with flying colors.
Doctor, I want to circle back for a second.
Sure.
You scared me quite well. You said, and this was going to be a major question for you this morning.
Yeah.
I talked to you about the quickening.
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't even get to all the facets. To me, it's many, many things. But you said there was a huge increase in the number of possessions. And I was going to ask you that. To me, that just adds to the pile. That is true. There's more now.
It's about, since 1975, when I really started in earnest exorcisms in the United States, it's about 800% increase in frequency.
Oh, my.
And it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. And one part of the phenomenon is this, Art, that now, for the first time, exorcists and psychiatrists are working closely together. And I work with psychiatrists. I do the spiritual side of it, and they do the psychiatric end of it. There's always a psychiatric preparation and follow-up on after an exorcism.
You mentioned that one psychiatrist simply gave up psychiatry.
That's right. I gave him a code name of Hammond. That's not his real name. But he was very, very skeptical about it all. And finally I said, okay, doctor, look, if you insist, but you must have some protection. He wasn't a Catholic, by the way. But he was a very honest, sincere man. I didn't mean but. He was. And once he went through it, that was it. He would never touch another possessed person. He would never touch psychiatry ever again. He went off and did something else. He was a qualified doctor and became an ordinary MD. And confined himself to that.
Doctor, how frequently do you think psychiatrists who are treating patients, or what percentage of their patients might indeed, instead of suffering psychiatric problems, be suffering some form of
possession? Well over 50% of the cases I have observed.
Wow.
Well over 50% are really possessed by demons, and of course nothing can be done about it. They're diagnosed as schizophrenic or as MPDs or as whatever, and there's no sucker for them. There is no sucker or help for them at all.
When you have done your job, and when we come back from the top of the hour, we'll talk about what an actual exorcism is like. I guess I want to know. But when you have done your job, and it's all over, and the demon leaves, where does that demon go?
Well, let me gently but firmly sort of put in a corrective there, Art, from the point of view of an expert. The demon has been deprived of a place, a location, a human person, in which to exercise power. Therefore, they're confined to where they originally were, which is a hell, They go back merely to suffering, because their suffering is intense and perpetual and non-stop. They have had a chance of exercising power outside of their tortures, and indeed the evil they inflict is a way of their getting their own back in some way or other, even though it doesn't relieve their pain.
So they are punished for their failure.
That's right, they're punished. And that's why in the Gospels, for instance, you have this the evil spirit saying to Jesus, don't send us back to hell. Send us into these pigs. Do you remember the swine of Gerasene?
Yes.
And they rushed over the precipice into the water and drowned themselves. They could possess something. There's a sort of relief, a temporary relief in not being condemned purely and simply to suffer in hell. And therefore they want something to inhabit. And Christ himself said that, and St. Paul says, and St. Peter, and lots of things in the New Testament say that the devil goes around seeking whom he may devour, like a lion, whom he may possess. And I must tell you that the increase, the enormous increase, about 800% over what it used to be in our small area, because it's only a small area we do, the northeast corner. And it is a huge increase. And here's one more thing to say, Art, which may sort of provoke a whole series of questions. Possession of the real diabolic kind is generational.
Generational.
Uh-huh. It's generational.
Passed on.
It's passed on by training. And it's a dreadful thing when somebody comes in who are perfectly respectable, good, normal American families, and they have reared their children to be Satanists and to accept possession. And they would, unless they stopped themselves, pass it on to their children. And it's been going on for well over 200 years.
All right, Doctor, hold it right there. Relax. You've got 8 or 9 minutes. I need 8 or 9 minutes after this.
Uh-huh.
And we'll be right back. And when we come back, we will ask you about that, and we will ask you about an actual exorcism. Dr. Malachi Martin is my guest. I think I'm glad we're taking a break. We're going to do that right now. We'll be back with more. You're listening to the American CBC Radio Network.